today on the show, I've got my prestigious admin for the Survival Punk Facebook fan page. Grizz, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Good. You guys?
Chilly. We've got, I think almost record-breaking snowfall in Tennessee.
It's right up there. This is the worst snow we've had in decades.
Yeah, I looked it up this morning. The record for the county we live in was set in 1915, I think, with 15 inches of snow.
Hmm.
So, and I bet you're laughing at that. You're like, 15 inches of snow is your record? Ha ha!
He's like, 15 inches of snow, that's what we get on Halloween.
Yeah, that's, shoot. It's bad for out here. We don't have the crews, the snow tires, but, we'll just stay at home and chill out. So
I've been in Dallas where they had 2 inches of snow, so I get it. I said I've been in Dallas, they've had 2 inches of snow, so I completely get it.
Oh, wow. Dallas. That shuts down. Well, yeah. What was it? A couple years ago? Last year, maybe? Texas had that ice storm that pretty much shut down Dallas-Fort Worth?
Yeah, that was last winter.
Yeah. Yeah, they can't. I don't think they even have snow trucks. I don't think they have them at all.
They're not equipped for it. See, this always reminds me, years and years ago, my dad used to be a garbage truck driver down in Miami Beach, Florida. And as a joke, all the garbage trucks had painted on the side of it, free snow removal. Because it's Miami Beach, Florida.
Yeah.
But this was back in the 60s. Then one freaking night, they got a freak 3 inches of snow in Miami Beach. They called all their drivers in at 2 o'clock in the morning to paint over the sides of their trucks.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they can't
handle it. Everybody out with a snow shovel at 7 in the morning, eh?
Oh, yeah. We got dinosaurs shoveling snow in Tennessee. It's, I'll have to share that video. It's all over the internet. So, first of all, how did you get into this whole survival and prepping thing? What got you on that?
It was one of those deals. You've probably heard it 1,000 times from 1,000 people. But honestly, I was basically a survivalist before I ever knew the title. It was one of those things that's always been an interest. It's always been something that I practiced and thought about. But it wasn't until, I don't know, 5, 6, 8 years ago, something like that, that I actually put a title to it. And wow, you know what? Actually, I am something.
Yeah. Awesome.
Other than that, it really is that boring.
Yeah. Well, you said that your town has like a population of what, 400 or something ridiculous? I mean, you've got no choice up there.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's it. You know, when you have small town life and you kind of live out, you know. I don't even live in the 400 head population town. I live out in the middle of nowhere. So yeah, it's you know, the first responder is me and my wife. And then, after that, if they're lucky 20 minutes later, somebody else shows up that, has some kind of credentials.
Yeah. Speaking of credentials. So today we're sort of going to focus on, sort of a car maintenance, winter car maintenance, bug out vehicle, and just general like winter related prepping. I know you fairly well over the few years that we've been friends and you've been my admin. So you do know about fixing things, right? You have a little bit of experience with that.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. 10 years as an aircraft mechanic and. Other than that, I've basically just always been working on my own stuff over the years. It kind of hurts to take them to the shop. You know what I mean? After a little while of doing your own stuff.
Yeah. It always like sort of occurred to me that airplane mechanics kind of got to be some of the best mechanics because, you know, if a car messes up, you might not have a problem, but airplane messes up.
It falls out of the fucking sky.
Yeah, it falls out of the sky, and you pretty much just killed a few hundred people.
What kind of aircraft you work on?
Right now, I'm working on the regional jets. Before that, I was working on corporate Lear jets, stuff like that.
Nice.
I've never been much into anything else. That's pretty much all I've ever wanted to do. So, first opportunity to do it, I did it.
Yeah, there's. So. I mean, I think I've seen before that like the mechanic demand in America is like so outpaced compared to like what there actually are. Like that, it's one of those industries like where if you know if a college kid said they're going to go to school to get like I don't know a mass communications degree. Or they're going to go become like a specialized mechanic. I'm going to tell them to probably become a mechanic because you got guaranteed work and not like, you know, you're bussing tables for 4 years because you have no experience.
See, and then there's people that have always subscribed to the whole go to college, go to law school, become a lawyer, go to medical school, become a doctor. And in the country we're living in, there are out of work doctors and lawyers.
Lots of them.
Lots and lots of them. I mean, but not enough young people are going into the field of mechanics. And it's a desperately needed field. With the population getting as high as it is, there's that many more vehicles on the road. There's that many more vehicles in the sky. So, I mean, it's something that's in high demand. God, I cannot clear my throat this morning.
I fully agree, though. Mike Rowe, I really like 90% of what he has to say on the subject is, you know, we just don't have enough trade. You know, guys that actually have skills to do shit. You know, they go to school and they come out completely useless with a piece of paper that a lot of times you might as well wipe your butt with it. Because they don't even know how to work. You know what I mean? They come out with this piece of paper saying that they can do these things, but they've never
saying
actually
they can show up on time. I've said for years that I would, if I was magically in charge of everything, I would probably abolish high school. Like, just get rid of high school. And then after you finish, you know, grade school, and I might get rid of, you know, middle school too, just go straight into a trade. Like, you know, find something and start, you know, if you spend like 4 years instead of like going to high school, you know, if you spend 4 years learning like a mechanics trade or something else like that, you come out that much better. You know, instead of like, I didn't learn shit in high school.
Either that or at the very least, abolish all those useless classes in college that they make you take. For no reason, you know, regardless of what your fucking majors or minors are.
Yeah.
I mean, just straight trade schools.
I learned one thing in college. I went for 1 year, and I only learned how to set up, run, and maintain websites that I did on my own using their high-speed internet.
Oh, you also learned that a paper comparing and contrasting apples and oranges will get you an F instantly.
That teacher was a retard. She was a retarded liberal, and she can go to hell. So let's get back to what are some of the things, like, so winter's coming for you. You live in Michigan, which is a big state. No one knows where you're at. So you live up there, not to give away your exact location. I'm not even using your name because you call yourself Grizz on the admin page. If you want to go by your real name, you can say it. Otherwise, we'll just call you Grizz. So you live in a state that gets a lot of snow. So for you, winter car prep, winter car maintenance is a big issue. For us, you know, I usually take some precautions, but it's not I don't have the same issues you have to deal with. So when you're thinking about winter car maintenance, what's your thought process? What's big on your agenda to do?
Well, first and foremost, it's fix all the shit that might break when it's cold. You know what I mean? Anything I have to crawl around underneath to fix when there's 2 feet of snow and it's minus 10 degrees. Yeah. I'm going to do that now if I can.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Other than that, just top off the fluids mostly and, air up the tires, make sure to, you know, go through the winter kit in the back seat, make sure that's all up to snuff. You know, nothing's missing or anything. And other than that, it's pretty straightforward.
Awesome. I know. So I think that the day before or the day of the, when our snowstorm hit here or the ice storm before the snowstorm hit, my ignition coil went out again. So I'm running on like two of my four cylinders. You know, so it's I've had this happen before. Like, it sort of struggles. There's not enough power. And I'm like, I don't want to go change an ignition coil in, you know, our foot of snow out there or whatever. It is a pain in the ass. But with that, yeah. There's no way. Apparently, my car eats ignition coils, which is just an issue with it. I think there's four of them. I've replaced four of them already, and now I'm going to replace two more because I'm pretty sure they come in pairs. So I got to replace two more now, which is just lovely. Annoying.
Sure.
Now, Grizz, there's something you said a minute ago. You said make sure your winter kit is up to snuff. Could you elaborate more on that? Like, what's your winter kit?
In my winter kit, generally, because every year it seems like it becomes something new, I need to put together a checklist. That way, every year, everything I want is in there. But what it ends up being is a little propane heater, a couple cans of propane, my heavy boots, my Baffin rated to -100 degree boots. I've never stupid things, but you know, if you're stuck on the side of the road, it is really nice to have comfortable feet. You know, a couple pairs of coveralls, a good tool kit, a good shovel. I have a couple of those chemical hand warmers in there, which it sounds cheesy as hell, but that's another one that if you're stuck on the side of the road, you're not doing anything, just waiting for, you know, somebody to drive by or whatever, having those in your pocket, keeping your hands warm helps a lot. So my stuff actually isn't all that unreasonable. Most of the work I put into it is basically just making sure the food is in there. You want to have some good sugar. You want to have some really good sugar, because if you get to a point where you're going to be hypothermic, it's nice to cram some sugar and get your body heat spiked. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So speaking of boots, we had a funny, so Mike, we went out yesterday, and the only sort of waterproof, the only boots that I have really are, the, you know, military issued, combat boots from Afghanistan, which they apparently suck really bad in the snow.
They're meant for the desert.
They're meant for the desert, which we don't have snow down here. So this is normally, like, I don't have, you know, those -100 degree boots. Like, we see, like, what, a negative temperature maybe once every few years. So, I need to look at getting a pair of decent, you know, winter boots. You know, just to keep in my kit, just for those occasions, because my toes were painfully hurting yesterday wearing, you know, a good pair of wool socks, but shitty, you know, Afghanistan combat boots.
See, this is another reason I think I was supposed to have been born in Canada. See, your feet were out there frozen, and you were halfway prepped for it. My wife's feet are always frozen. She always complained about cold toes. Meanwhile, I'm out there in, like, a pair of shitty socks and a pair of sneakers, and my feet were completely fine. Not comfortable at everything. It's just, I'm built for the cold. And, yes, you can look at my physique. I've got that layer of blubber like a walrus.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I love the cold. It's the only time I'm comfortable.
Yeah. You mentioned that you have a propane heater in there, which I would definitely say for, you know, northern folks, that's a real big, like, necessity. Whereas here, usually in the wintertime, I'll keep my military sleep system, you know, it's like rated to negative whatever, because we won't have those extreme temperatures. So for here, I don't really worry so much about, like, you know, extra heat like that. Because I'll bring I usually have, like, a cook stove system in the car. So if I use that, and that'll warm me up a little bit. But besides that, I just want to insulate myself. But
yeah
for you, a propane heater, you know, you get what, negative? What's some of the coldest temperatures you've had recently?
Recently, this year has been really warm. It's been, jeez. I think we had like -9 the other night, but that was. It was maybe 2 hours, and then it spiked back up to zero.
Wow.
But normally this time of year, it's February.
Yeah, that's like -9 for us is like one of those rare, like, freak occurrences. It's like,
that never happens here.
I think last year we hit -9 when it got super cold.
Maybe the wind chill hit -9, but I don't think the actual temperature did.
Yeah, I know, Who was it?
No, I don't consider windchill. It doesn't need that. I mean, it obviously it factors, but it's one of those deals that it just adds so much confusion to the conversation. You know what I mean? That I always just consider still there. But,
oh, you see, no, windchill is one of those things that fucking pussy Southerners came up with. Like, fuck, they're like, what is tent? Nah, hell, it feels colder than that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got to be -9.
Yeah, yeah. It's
how somebody took something completely subjective and tried to make a science out of it is beyond me. Like, well, what does it feel like? I don't care what it feels like. Tell me what it is. You know. But
yeah.
Time of the year, it's between -20 and -30. You know, at night, and then we see like, you know, like single digits below during the day. So this is a heat wave, man. We're enjoying this.
Yeah, it's not made for me.
Meanwhile, almost everybody in Tennessee would be dead.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't joking the other day when I put on Facebook that Nashville, like most Nashville and most of Tennessee, literally was closed. Like the mayor is like, no, we're closed. The city is shut. We don't go. You know, and you guys were like, stupid Nashville. But like it's ridiculous.
Go ahead. Like I said, though, I get it. I mean, it's one of those deals that, you know, if we didn't have Johnny on the spot, plow trucks, if we didn't have, you know, pretty much every single person has at least one four-wheel drive vehicle in their driveway. If we didn't have all that, it'd probably be the same way. And if we didn't get that snow all the time, we wouldn't have any of that. So it just makes perfect sense. I think most of us would feel for you. It's just a function of, you know, you're right. In context of our lives, it really isn't anything. But anybody that's actually been outside of the area gets it.
Right. I mean, I think I'm sort of the anomaly. Like, so I actually had a chance to a couple of days ago when I was leaving work. We had the parking lot was a solid sheet of ice, and I remember that in my trunk. Last year, Jeff Radke sent me a pair of snow cleats, so I snapped them on, and I was, like, prancing around the car. You know, like, I'd never had a chance to use them before. So even on the, you know, because the parking lot was a solid sheet of ice, because we don't usually get snow, we get ice. I wasn't slipping around at all, and I think I talked to you last year when I made my decision to buy snow chains. I still have those, and I just hadn't... I hadn't used them this year just because I'd rather not even bother going out to deal with the crap. So, but yeah, I mean, unlike most Southerners, I actually do have snow chains and snow cleats.
Well, if you actually, I mean, it comes down to, in my mind, the most dangerous thing you can do right now is jump in your car and try and go out where nobody else is comfortable driving. And, you know what I mean? You really are safer at home as long as you got your needs covered, and sound like you did.
Yeah. So. Yeah. The only reason that I went out yesterday was because I needed a refill on kerosene. The heater I have now isn't the most effective. So, but.
Yeah. And while you were out yesterday, tell all of our listeners how active, Dixon City was.
There's actually a lot of car. Apparently, there's a large population of Jeep owners in Dixon, and they were all out yesterday just basically having fun.
Yeah, but what about all the city businesses?
Most of them were closed. I mean, there's no point in going out because, I mean, except for, like, Walmart and Waffle House, everything was closed, really.
Yeah, the two things that never close for anything.
Yeah,
Waffle House doesn't even close for Christmas.
Oh, you Grizz, you probably don't even know what a Waffle House is, do you? You're a northerner.
I've heard of it. Never been to one, though.
You've heard of it.
Waffle House, I mean, well, obviously, it's basically a diner type thing. They're famous for their waffles, but they do a lot of other food, and they never close. They're open 24 hours a day, 365 to 66 days a year, depending on the leap year.
Yeah.
They close. They have locks on their doors, and for the life of me to this day, I've never figured out why. They don't fucking use them.
No. It's next time you make it down south, if we ever get a chance to meet up, we'll have to eat some bad cheap food at the Waffle House. Their hash browns are by far like the best ever. Just nasty, greasy.
Yeah, they're famous for their fucking hash browns. You can get scattered, smothered, covered, chunked, topped, diced, peppered, capped, gravied.
Yeah. All served to you by the greatest meth heads that we have to offer.
Nope. Let's put it this way. Nobody has ever been fired from the Waffle House as a cook due to their appearance.
No. Or lack of teeth.
Like Denny's.
So, yeah. I've never eaten at a Denny's, actually.
I've eaten at a Denny's, and it's not that far off. Denny's is more of a go-in-and-sit-down type restaurant, more like a traditional restaurant. Well, Waffle House is basically set up just like an old diner.
Yeah. So, speaking of car maintenance, God knows we can't stay on topic.
Just fucking your question's just written down. Speaking of car maintenance.
Yeah. No. What are some overlooked car maintenance things that you encounter that you see most people just neglect and overlook?
A lot of it. Coolant. A lot of, be honest, one of the biggest pet peeves to me is brake fluid. That stuff is, you know, brake fluid itself absorbs water out of the air. So, you know, if that stuff is discolored, if it's nasty, that's water in it. You know, that's not anything else. And if you're out when it's that cold, it will freeze up. And now you got anti-lock brake valves and all kinds of funky things that have very small ports in there. But if it freezes up, things just don't work right. But between that and antifreeze. I'm terrible about antifreeze. Neglect that just like everybody else. But it's one of those things like, God, you know, we really should put more thought into that, you know, but we never do.
I didn't know about the brake line fluid getting water out of it, which to me seems like in a really cold place, you know, with snow on the ground, that's the last time you want your brakes to start failing.
Oh, God, no. I didn't know about this myself. Antifreeze, that's one of those things that's just so fucking easy to not think about.
Oh, yeah, no, I... yeah.
It's incredibly easy to take all the stuff that works on your car for granted as long as it's working.
Yeah.
You only notice that shit when it stops working.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about it the other day. You know, I'm a big diesel head. I like diesel trucks. And I was kind of thinking about it the other day. It's like, God, I bet you guys don't even do winter fuel down there. So you probably got a whole fleet of guys out there with 3/4 ton diesel trucks that they're probably afraid to drive it. That or they don't know any better and they're out freezing up.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not big on diesel, but I can't recall seeing winter diesel.
No, you don't see that down here.
No.
You just don't. No, that doesn't exist south of the Mason-Dixie line.
Yeah. Huh. Never. My cat he's stinky.
No, when I was up in I lived up in North Dakota quite a few years ago. God, it's got to be 18 years ago at this point. I do remember seeing winter diesel. I also remember seeing school buses with snowplow things on the front of them.
Wow.
Yeah, those kids didn't get fucking school days. No, they didn't get fucking snow days. There was no such thing as snow days up there. Some tough motherfuckers. Yeah, I used to live in a small town called Ellendale in North Dakota. The population when I was there was like 6,000. That include all the outliers.
Yeah.
I mean, in town itself was probably about 5,500 of those. I mean, most of the people lived in town, but it was a small church town, had a Bible college in it and all that stuff. And yeah, everybody plugged their cars in. It didn't matter what their fucking cars ran on. You saw plugs on hanging out of cars all the damn time. Oh, wow.
Well, it's kind of nice if you can. I mean, that's one of those things, like, if you can afford to put a block heater on anything you own, it's awful nice to go out there and start it up and not have to wait 20 minutes for it to warm up or whatever. But, I understand why somebody might not want to spend the money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, there was like one car dealership in town, and I think that was part of his gimmicks, that every car he sold came with that.
Yeah,
I mean, it just came with that. I think that was Bloomhart Automotive or some shit like that. I think that was one of his big gimmicks, was that you could plug in every single one of his cars.
Nice. Yeah.
What's funny though is you could probably take that down to California and sell it as a hybrid. It's like, check it out, it's a plug-in hybrid.
Yeah, yeah. I bet you could.
They won't know the difference.
But no. You can bring weather year round. They're plugging your car in. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't know what they're doing. California.
Wow.
Just hold on. You might have gotten the notification. I posted something on Facebook earlier on the fan page. And it was a snow picture. And the guy was like, he got no snow, but he was in a place called Manteca, California. I was like, wait a second. Doesn't Manteca mean lard in Spanish? He's like, yeah. You live in lard, California? That's lard, California. So you mentioned that you carry a toolbox. So I'm wondering, in your vehicles, what are some of the tools that you carry and spare parts? Like, I should be carrying some spare parts to my car. I should be carrying spare ignition coils, for God's sake, because I burn them up. You know, like hoses and stuff. Like, what do you carry? Like, what are, you know, some of your tools? I don't want to, like, a breakdown of, like, you know, everything in your toolbox. But, you know, some of them. And then if you do carry spare parts or what, or extra things like that, what do you carry?
We need serial numbers and barcodes.
Yeah.
No, the biggest thing I've carried in this truck since I've owned it is a set of filters. I gelled up one time, left me on the side of the road, and ever since I just make sure that I always have a spare set of filters in there as far as parts. But depending on what you have, I mean, if you drive a Jeep, having a set of U-joints around makes perfect sense. If you know what I mean? Gosh, I don't know what every vehicle has its own specific need.
Yeah.
For example, like if I tried to carry CV shafts for my truck, if I blew one of those things on the side of the road, that's really just not something I'm going to try to fix there in a ditch. You know what I mean? So it's kind of one of those things that you have to temper everything out. But pretty much just filters in this one.
Okay.
When I went deep, I had I had spare tie rod ends. I had spare U-joints. I had, I had piles of parts in that stupid thing. And there's like no space there whatsoever. So you had like a milk crate full of parts in the back taking up space that you really wish you didn't have to deal with. But as far as tools, just standard hand tools, half inch drive, you know, ratchet and sockets and, on down to quarter inch drive, ratchet and sockets, good wrench set, good set of hammers. You'd be surprised how often on the side of the road how helpful a hammer is.
Oh, yeah. Especially if you have a Ford going bad with a starter.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I've done that many times. You had to carry a hammer for a while, didn't you, in your – what was that car you had, the starter, that we had to bang every time we went out?
Oh, God, that was – what was that? Ford Tempo.
Yeah.
I replaced the starter on that damn three times.
That would be a good one.
My stubborn old man kept buying that car, bought three of them in a row.
Yeah, I had an 82 Ford Tempo.
Blew the transmissions out of the first two, blew the engine out of the third one. By the time it was done, it looked like he had a Tempo graveyard. He had just parked stripped from all of them into one to make one car run, and then he finally just sold back because he got sick of messing with it. But
oh my God! See, something similar was happening with me at the time. I was living with friends, and in their backyard they had an '82 Mercury Topaz, which is the exact same fucking car.
I used to have a Mercury Topaz, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's the exact same fucking car as the Ford Tempo, and it had just been sitting there. Something like, I think the transmission had gone out on it.
Yeah, yeah.
And basically every time something fuck up on my fucking Tempo, I was just stealing parts off that damn Topaz.
Yeah.
including the damn starter.
He had a big row of bushes that long driveway. And then if you went out and around the bushes, you'd walk right into his little Ford Tempo graveyard. And a lot of times people would come in, they'd turn around and like, Christ, I didn't know you were running that junkyard. What do you want? Buy it. I'll sell it to you now. It's cheap anyway. But it's all tempered by really what you drive. If you drive a Ford F-250 with the 300 inline six, God, we're going back a few years, I might throw a starter in there because that's really the only damn thing that ever goes wrong with that truck.
Yeah.
Starter and ignition coils. But what I currently drive, honestly, big diesels, if you blow something important, you ain't fixing it on the side of the road. You know what I mean? You could.
No. Yeah.
But
yeah.
Just there's so much going on. That, yeah.
In that case, you're probably just better off keeping a AAA in your glove box.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that. But like I say, I've never had to use it. One of those deals that I suppose a couple of brake lines might be a bad idea, but I don't do that. Haven't done it yet. Good shovel. Yeah. A very good shovel. You know, you don't go to Auto Value and buy the $10 plastic folding thing. Go to Lowe's or something and get a heavy metal 4 foot long, you know, small compact metal shovel. Throw that in there. Other than that, it really isn't anything too awful special.
Good.
Not what you expected to hear. You expect some super special fancy stuff or what?
No, that's it makes sense. Like I'd say the only thing like in my experience that, and I don't, but the only thing I would add would be like some high temperature piping and some like hose clamps. My first car that I ever got, which was a Mercury Topaz, I decided at 18, 19? So it would be a fun thing to go hill jumping in East Nashville in my car. So I'd go as fast as I can on like a super steep hill and then jump off of it, which caused me to break the motor mounts in it. so then the flywheel was leaning forward and cut the transmission line.
Oh my God.
And at one point I went through like a case of transmission fluid to make like one trip. So yeah, I had to spend a lot of money to fix that car, and then broke down eventually. But in an emergency, you know, if I'd had a high temperature plastic hose, it would have been a temporary fix because still the flywheel is going to cut that too because the engine mounts were broken.
Oh, God. See, that reminds me of my first car. It was an 86 Olds Cutlass, had a rebuilt 350 engine in it. I had to put a quart of oil in that with every fucking fill up. Every time I stopped for gas, I had to put another quart of oil in that damn thing. Yeah. I never had to actually change the oil filter. The oil wouldn't get dirty enough in there to fucking warn change in the damn thing. Oh, my God. Yeah, and then after a while, we finally got that problem fixed. And then one of the fucking seals on my radiator blew. So on a 20-mile trip, I have to stop three times to put water in the damn thing. I literally, the trunk of that car, I had a shitload of, like, fucking milk jugs and 2-liter bottles. Oh, I had, like, 30 things just full of fucking water. Because I knew I'd have to stop every 10 miles to fucking keep my car from exploding.
Oh, my God.
Well, you know what? That is one thing that I keep in there is hose clamps. You know, assorted sizes of hose clamps that lives in my toolbox just because, you know, exactly what you said. You know, random stupid things, and the manufacturers are all going to these gumpy spring loaded. I call them. Whatever.
Yeah. No.
But those little spring loaded ones over the years, they start getting weak. They rust. They break. They whatever. Well. You know, you get stranded somewhere, you just take that thing off, throw a regular worm clamp on there, tighten it down, call it a day. You know what I mean? Solves a lot of headaches.
As
far as hoses and stuff like that, there's so many various sizes of that stuff, too, that I can't imagine carrying all the different sizes of that in the car. I suppose in the garage, I mean, I have a box full of various sizes and random assortments of brand new. You're in the auto parts store or whatever. You know what? It'd be smart for me to have that.
A couple years ago, I guess it was last year, year before, I wrote a big long article about traveling in the winter and things that, you know, I keep personally in my vehicle in wintertime. And one of the comments was like, well, how do you have room to even like drive in your car? And to be honest, you know, I have a hatchback and all of this stuff fit in my hatchback. You know, I couldn't put groceries back there or anything, but you know, like my bug out bag, you know, winter stove, water. You know, I usually like, usually I used to, keep a, I'd go to the, like the store, buy a case of water or two and just throw it in the back seat, you know, and then I had, you know, cases of water, which for here works fairly well. You know, for you, you can't keep a case of water in your bag unless you, you know, plug a heating blanket on it or something. But, you know, for here it works usually.
I've taken to, at least my plan. I've never actually had to enact it, but I keep, one of those stainless steel water bottles in there. And then you just pack that thing full of snow and, you know, warm it up. But, if you've ever tried to melt snow, actually now would be a great time for you to go out and explore this. Go out, take a metal pot, take your cook kit and try to melt snow into drinking water.
He's actually already been doing that.
Yeah, that's what I've made my coffee with this morning. Yeah.
You did?
I had an empty metal 10 gallon, like a number 10 empty can of coffee that I use for that. And, so I was melting snow for that this morning and, it wasn't that bad actually. So
no,
I made my tea and my coffee and some other, just drinking water with it.
Yep. Pure, fresh yellow snow.
Yeah, no, no lemon flavored. but yeah, it's it was weird because I had to kind of start slow because until like there was a little bit of water in the bottom, it was just wanting to sort of burn the pot.
Well, that's it. As it melts, it'll evaporate. It'll evaporate as fast as it melts. So you have to. It helps a lot to throw like an inch of water in the bottom or something.
Yeah. The first thing melted, I poured that water in the bigger container, and then that, you're right, that helped out a whole lot. But the first thing I melted...
Don't let the bottle come empty.
No. Yeah. So, but yeah, I was doing that this morning, and then I think after I get off the phone with you, I'm going to go sledding. I haven't done that in like 20 years, and I think I'm going to hang a hammock. So, yeah, I've never done extreme cold weather hammocking either.
Yeah, he's going to hang a hammock. He's going to, you know, try on his yoga pants. He's going to finish writing that vegan cookbook that he's been working on for 20 years.
Whatever. Vegan cookbook. How to cook a vegan.
You know what? A toe strap and jumper cable, obviously. That sounds really simplistic and stupid, but... I think if you don't have jumper cables, you're wrong. And a toe strap solves a lot of headaches. That's one of those deals.
Oh, God.
Even if you're not stuck, you know how many times I've pulled up on a situation where somebody else is stuck and somebody else there that would gladly pull them out, but, man, I don't have anything to latch on with them. You know, so I don't even have to do the work. I just whip out the toe strap, say, here, have fun. And they solve their own problem.
That's a couple of things I actually keep in my car on a regular basis. I have the toe straps. I have jumper cables. I also have a jump pack.
Yeah.
Just in case you can't find anybody to jump start off of.
Yeah, I've got one too, and it works okay, especially for the smaller vehicles. Another thing that I know Mike has and I've used in the past, and that's an upgraded jack. So the jack that your car or truck comes with is usually a piece of shit.
Usually one of those little scissor jacks.
Yeah, and it's crappy. It takes forever. They break. They rust. I've used bottle jacks in the past and high lift jacks. Mike has the
I spent the extra money and got one of those rolling floor jacks. I mean, like you see them actually used in the garage.
Yeah.
That thing just saves so much fucking.
That's what I use.
You're not cranking. And cranking one of those scissor jacks when it's all the way down is a bitch. Because you don't get to just do this.
Yeah.
Switch that around. Switch that around.
Yeah.
No. With this, I'm just...
Yeah.
In my cars. No, I love that damn thing. Now, I'm kind of almost obsessive about keeping tools and weird shit in my car. Just to be on the same... Anything that I think can be fucking helpful... is in the fucking trunk of my car right now. Plus, like, extra fluids and all that shit.
Yeah.
Like, I've like, burst pipes. Robbie, the Oldsmobile taught me always to keep extra oil around. Then I've had other cars teach me keep extra brake fluid. My current car's teaching me to keep extra power steering fluid.
And zip ties.
Oh, God.
I guess I just learned over the years that that's, I guess I just assume that's all the standard stuff that everybody does. I mean, yeah, it's, oil, brake fluid, and tranny fluid. And tranny fluid's a big one.
Oh, God, yeah. Now, my, let's see, my Mazda Protege, it taught me to keep extra transmission fluid around.
Yeah.
Let's see, well, I grew up with parents. I grew up with a father that was an over-the-road truck driver, ergo, he was never there to teach me any of this stuff. And a mother whose automotive knowledge toward me was, oh, God, please don't ever drive. It'll scare me to death. I'll have a heart attack if you ever get out on the roads with all these maniacs.
Oh, God.
She was as Jewish as a mother can be without actually being Jewish.
That's funny, yeah.
Yeah, I had one parent not there to teach me to drive. The other one begging me never to learn.
Drive, yeah.
So my automotive knowledge to this day is still so fucking subpar. I learned from all the shitty cars that I've owned, and I have owned an assortment, a plethora of shitty cars.
Yeah.
See, I just grew up on crap cars. One of my favorites actually was a 78 Chevy Nova. And I'm not that old. 78 was 30 Nova. Years old when I got it. Yeah. But this was, I'm not exaggerating, this old dude bought this car for back and forth to church in the bar. I got it. It honestly had 62,000 miles.
That's a great mix.
Church in the bar, yep. It was used like one time a week, and I don't think he shut it down between the two. But he, then during the week, he would park it in the weeds. And after he died, it just sat in the weeds for like 2 years before his daughter finally decided, you know what? I'm going to get rid of dad's old car. And I think I paid $200 for this thing. Nice. But being in the weeds, the subframe was rotted off this stupid thing. Needless to say, as the unibody and the subframe were rusting and separating apart, man, you have all kinds of cool problems that you got to learn how to fix in that process. I don't know if you've ever messed with this car, but it has leaf springs in the back. And this thing had a cracked leaf spring in the front of the axle on one side and a cracked leaf spring in the back of the axle on the other. So, you know, it was sitting on the bump stop in the back, dog tracking by like 7 or 8 inches.
That sounds like such amazing fun.
Yeah. Wow. Actually, I carried a spare air filter in that car because driving down the road, if it was snowing, the air filter would clog full of snow. You'd get to a point where you couldn't get past like 30 mile an hour. All right, here we go. Pop the hood, change out the air filter, and you'd have everything back.
Wow.
Really, the problem I've ever had with that car. That was one of those strange things that the engine just kept running and running and running.
Which is weird because you said you paid $200 for that. One time I spent $100 to buy a 1990 Cavalier. It looked like shit.
Oh, I remember that Cavalier.
One of the windows I think was plexiglass and was wired shut. It had no heating, no defrosting. So I had to like manually, you know, scrape the inside and outside of the windows. One of the headlights was like busted and like, so I had like no glass over the bulb that I'd put in there. But this $100 piece of shit car ran for 4 years, and I only changed the oil in it like one time. 4 years, like one oil change. In winter time, like I had to bundle up and like wear blankets and stuff. And so one time while pulling out of the parking lot at work, the car was like making a weird noise and like not moving very well. And my buddy was in the car, and he got out and like looked at it. And what if the back driver's side tire wasn't spinning? It was dragging that tire along. And then it started rolling again. And then it worked fine for like another few months. And it was like, that was the best investment I ever made in a car.
Oh, fucking Cavaliers they will fucking run until they're nothing but a frame, a motor, a steering wheel, and four fucking tires.
Yeah.
Every fucking thing else will fall apart of those damn things, but you cannot kill a fucking Cavalier's motor.
It was ridiculous.
And that's one thing. That's one thing up here. A mindset difference between us and you too is, we use so much salt on the roads up here that unless mm-hmm. you're prepared to your car every day, a car is disposable. If it lasts 1 year past you paying it off, you've done really well. It's honestly one of those things. At least north of, say, Bay City, south of Bay City, it's not so bad. But north of Bay City in Michigan. You might actually have to look at a map. That's to look at the mitten above the thumb area, where the thumb is on the mitten. Sorry, that was really hokey. But
Mike was just telling me a story about the thumb and the middle pinky finger and stuff, and I was like, oh, that's you literally are just saying that.
No, see, I work customer service for this one job, and this one of our customers had called in, and she was asking for help in this certain area. And I'm like, I'm trying to find this store up there to help her with. And I'm like, all right, what city are you in? And she tells me what city. And I'm looking at Google Maps, and I'm like, oh, you're over by the pinky. This guy's over all the way over on the thumb.
Yeah.
I mean, she doesn't bat an eye at it.
Yeah.
See, my dad's.
That really is how we describe it. That really is.
I know. See, my dad, he was born and raised in Dearborn, Michigan, in the Detroit area. And so, yeah, that's always the way he described it. It was basically whatever part of the hand, or he would talk about the Upers on the Upper Peninsula.
Nice. But yeah, we're a total separate animal up here. I don't know. Anyway, we almost look like more of Wisconsin, but yeah, anything north of like Bay City, which is in the thumb area, you really might as well just plan on replacing your car every 5-6 years. And, because of the salt, like I say, the rust is such a problem. I've actually gone south for cars, just because it gets you a couple more years before they rot out.
Yeah, we completely don't have that problem here.
Yeah, no, that's not something. It never gets wet or salty enough to make that a problem in Tennessee.
I would say our bigger problem is like summer heat damage to like the inside. Like it'll just murder your dashboard, your steering wheel, all that stuff gets just cracked and destroyed.
Oh my God! Then the paint jobs, especially if you have that like that undercoating or that clear coat on it,
yeah,
that starts blistering up and looking like fucking Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, you have different parts, different problems.
Yeah, your dashboard starts getting cracks in it, and starts you hit it too hard, the damn thing starts chipping off.
Yeah. I think
that's one of the big reasons why we neglect coolant so much here is because, cars really never last so long that, the coolant ever has a chance to get too far gone, you know, but if you're not afraid to drive a rust bucket, definitely a major issue, but,
okay, you.
Oh my God. Some of the rednecks and hillbillies down here will fucking keep a car. I mean, I've seen them keep cars going literally decades and decades and decades, and the damn thing looks like it's about to rattle apart at the fucking seams.
Yeah.
But they've had the thing for 25 fucking years, and they're going to have it for another 25 years.
Yeah. Every part's a different color.
Oh, yeah. One door's this color, one door's this color. Neither one matches the actual body of the car. Yeah. I've seen pickup trucks where the cab is like green, but the damn bed is red.
Shoot.
Oh yeah, and then the tailgate will be blue and not even off that model.
I don't know. The tailgate says it's a Ford.
Yeah, I literally saw a tailgate that was made of like wood one time, like thick lumber.
We have seen we have seen front bumpers made out of fucking wood down here.
Yeah, it's.
It is not it's a little unusual, but it's not unheard of to see fucking car parts replaced with like damn railroad ties and shit.
Yeah.
True story. We have a fair amount of them that the box, the bed on the truck would rot off. Guys will just bed out of wood.
Yeah.
You're talking about guys that they probably use this truck pounding through the woods to collect firewood for their wood stoves or, to plow the driveway. They don't really give a shit. You know what I mean? They just, rip the bed off, build something out of wood and call it a day. I won't say there's a lot, but if you drive around, if you put, you know, a couple hundred miles on your car in a day, you'll see at least a couple.
Yeah.
They're out there.
Wow.
Oh, oh my God! This one buddy of mine is funny. He was constantly having to put that damn starter fluid in his car, and I was there a lot with him riding around. He'd open up the hood. He had all sorts of fucking wood blocks in the fucking engine, holding things where they're supposed to be.
Oh, wow!
He had at least 5 pieces of damn wood under the hood of that car at all times. It was just fucking hilarious.
We're doing like a show of the opposite of what you should do.
Make sure you have access to wood, people.
I've literally seen a guy. Yeah, I've seen a guy that mounted his battery in a milk crate to keep it.
Oh yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I've seen that exact same thing before.
It's I've got 2 questions left, Grizz, and then okay. We'll go sledding, and you can. Lift some weights and tell me how strong you're getting.
Sorry about that.
So, yeah. What's that?
I gotta brag to somebody, right?
Yeah. I've got my eyes on buying an Olympic barbell here if I can get my electricity and my wood stove cheap enough. But if not, I don't know. So, you and me have talked back and forth a few times on bug out vehicles, cause, you know, it's prepper porn, you know, the bug out vehicles. Some of them are pretty amazing. So if I gave you an unlimited budget and said, Grizz, I want you to build the ultimate bug out vehicle, what would be what would be the few things that you include in it, and what would be the vehicle you chose to modify?
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, unlimited budget. What would you start out with?
Oh God, probably. Well, not probably. It would be a Deuce.
Nice.
With the big tires, probably. What are they? Was that come with the 42s? Rip the bed off and throw a camper onto the frame back there.
Deuce.
So now you've got 6x6 power. Diesel, you know, mechanical diesel, a really cool, camper, tow pretty much anything you want, and then just outfit it the way we all would anyway. You know what I mean? Just, big, massive battery bank and, backup power.
Yeah.
Jenny, it would have to be Jenny.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, I know everyone, every prepper has like fantasized about their ultimate bug out vehicle, you know, especially with, you know, if they had the money, what they would do. And, that's definitely up there. Like, I think personally, I would go with an old Blazer. I really like the old Blazers for bug out vehicles. They kind of fall in that gray man category of prepping where, you know, you see an old Blazer and you're like, you don't think twice about it. Whatever. But they've got like, what is it? I think Corvette engines in them. Mm-hmm. And you get good tires on them, and then, there's lots of room back there for, you know, all of your prepping stuff. That's not quite like the full on the apocalypse, you know, like your Deuce would be much better like in a Mad Max world, you know, but just for like general bug out vehicles, like I definitely am a fan of the old Blazers before the computers and stuff were in them.
Well, see, you gave me an unlimited budget. What I actually intend to do with my family is a Jeep. And there's no reason why the only thing that will ever be used for is a bug out vehicle. But, no. You know, go out with a family, you build a bunch of memories, whatever. And then if you ever actually do have to bail, it doesn't hurt to have a vehicle that that has a really good range, and that's a lot of the modifications on said Jeep would be for the sake of range. But you know, there's I think in our world it has to be tempered with reality, and something like a Blazer, a Jeep, or a Bronco. There's really cool Broncos out there.
Yeah,
or an International Harvester Scout. I think when you start playing around with those things, now you have something that you can take the kids out and, you know, go camping with and build a bunch of memories, live a life. You know what I mean? So yeah, I get what you're saying for sure.
I think Mike would definitely go with a Land Rover, an old Land Rover.
Maybe, but I was thinking more like an Apache.
The helicopter?
Yeah, it has machine guns and missiles on it.
There you go. So yeah, last question, and we'll let you go. So you drive in the snow a lot more than we do. Do you have like a couple tips to give people that don't ever drive in the snow?
Just slow down. That's really what it. That sounds stupid, but God, you know how many people that just don't get it. They really
Chris, we are talking about like people from the South here, especially in Nashville. Worst fucking drivers in the country. They don't know what. If you were doing the speed limit, you were going to get ran the hell over.
I lived in Detroit when I was getting my credentials for aircraft maintenance, and every year, invariably, as soon as you get 2-3 inches of snow on the ground, there would be piles and piles of cars just standing in the same spot in the ditch. And what that is if they're still trying to go the full same normal speed, they come around the same corner and they follow each other into the ditch. It's like,
oh my God.
You know, slow the hell down. It's all it takes. It's one of those things, just temper your skills with the situation, you know. And four-wheel drive. Don't use four-wheel drive to get further into trouble.
That's a good
leave
one.
Leave it in two-wheel drive until you get into trouble. Put it in four-wheel drive, back out, and get the hell out of there. These guys, they'll throw it in four-wheel drive, and they don't realize they're in trouble until they're so deep that now you got to call a tractor to get them out. True story.
Yeah, because the four-wheel drive means invincibility. It means that I can drive like there's nothing on the road.
Yeah. That's kind of like the way I use my snow change is almost like a last resort. Like, I absolutely have to do this. I'm going to use these because I have no choice. And, you know, granted, the only time I've used them is to go up a steep dirt driveway in the middle of the winter. Like, almost.
Nothing but mud and ice.
Yeah, and I didn't even struggle going up it with my front-wheel drive only. You know, hatchback.
And how many times did you try to get up that hill before you broke down and put the snow chains on it, though?
I tried several times, and it was impossible. It wasn't even going to happen.
Yeah, and then you slapped those sons bitches on there, and you said you went up it like it was nothing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I just leisurely just rolled up it. You know?
No, but I've been driving around. A few years ago, we had what everybody called Icemageddon.
Yeah.
And I'm heading down this one part of one of these back highways. And it's an uphill, very curvy, okay? I mean, you curve to the right, then you curve to the left, and you curve right back to the right again. All the while, it's going uphill. And I'm in, my wife says, well, actually, at this point, I was driving. It's a Suzuki SX4. Never buy a fucking Suzuki. They suck ass. Everything's expensive on them. But I'm driving the Suzuki SX4, which has all-wheel drive on it. Not as good as four-wheel drive, but a lot better than having nothing at all. And I am one of the rational people. I will drive many, many miles under the speed limit when it's icy out, and that's if I have to drive at all. But I'm heading up this in my all-wheel drive, and I'm having to dodge back and forth, left and right, because, let's see, well, on the right side of the road, there's three cars off in the ditch on the first curve. Then on the left side of the road, there's like fucking six cars off in the ditch on that side. I mean, just a litter of like cars halfway off and totally off the road. I mean, I think I counted something like 23 cars off in that one. Meanwhile, I'm just trying to weave back and forth between their damn bumpers, and people are just looking at me like, Like, I'm the asshole because I'm not the one that fucking doesn't know how the hell to drive.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I actually got flipped off like by two different people in that group because I was driving slow and got between them. I think it's probably because I didn't stop to help. But it's an uphill fucking slope in a little tiny Suzuki. What the hell am I going to do, tow 20 fucking cars out?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No. Yeah. I can't tow shit out even with all-wheel drive on a fucking slope.
Yeah.
You know what? That's one thing about Detroit, too. Like I say, you'd be driving around and there'd be cars in the ditch, you know, 4 or 5 thick and whatever. But you want to stop and you want to try and help. You want to try and be the nice guy, whatever. But at the same time, it's like, you know, hell, how much you, at some point you gotta live your life. I'm not gonna spend all day, literally, it would be all day just driving around like, alright, where you gotta go, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm like the last person that would turn down helping somebody. I'm really not, but I'm not gonna stop and try and deliberately put myself in a situation where I'm gonna fuck my own car up too, cause then, I mean, that doesn't do anybody any damn good and it does me even worse.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, but if I can help, I will help because people have stopped and helped me, and that's just the way I like to, you know, pay it forward. I really do. But I'm not going to sit there and try to, like, futilely tow somebody out of the ditch. And when I say ditch, I'm not talking about, like, a little 2-foot drop. I mean steep, damn near, like, ravine drops on either side of this fucking road. And there's no way in hell I'm going to – I just, you know – it's realistic. I wasn't going to get anybody out of any trouble at that point. So,
You knew the limitations of your vehicle, which that's another big one. You know, understand the limits, go out, test them, get to know the limitations of your vehicle, and you know, stay within them. You know, that's one of the big things that we all do here anyway. Is like your first day when you have your driver's license, you go out to a big empty parking lot, like a Walmart parking lot, at 2 o'clock in the morning. And you just start twisting cookies. You start, you know, throwing yourself into drifts. You start doing donuts and whatever. And I'm not saying it's right, but you know what? You learn what to do.
Yeah.
You start getting sideways on a curve or whatever. You learn how to steer out of it. And until you actually do it, until you've actually done it, it's not something you can teach. You have to just go out and do it and get a feel for, oh, all right, I'm sitting this way, so I need to do this. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to learn your car.
That's
right.
Two days ago, had
you tried to latch on to even one car in that situation, you probably would have blown your tranny.
I've already had the transmission on that Sam Suzuki replaced.
Yeah, and you don't want to do it again.
No, that was way too fucking expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, This car, everything that goes wrong with it, with like the exception of the headlight bulbs, you have to go to the fucking dealership. And there's like the nearest dealership, and I'm not even sure if it's still there, was like 60 miles away. It's not far.
Wow. Mm. Yeah, no, get that.
The next car I buy will be a Toyota.
The next car I buy is Chinese knockoff.
He's going to get a Honda.
A Honda, yeah. No, we've been watching too much Top Gear. So I guess that's all I've got. I think you have a Facebook page to go administrate.
Yeah, you're actually the only other person from Team Survival Punk that I've actually talked to.
Technically, he's the only other person of Team Survival Punk. I mean,
hey, this whole thing could be a tax write off. It's a board meeting.
Yeah. No. Yeah. if you look at it, it says I have 6 admins. I can't recall the last time I saw anyone besides you and me post on there. So I'm probably going to kick everyone else out.
He'd make me an admin, but he knows I'd be as bad as the other 5.
Yeah, you'd never post.
I don't post shit on my own Facebook account.
Yeah.
Honestly, man, I don't know. You've looked at my personal page. You understand what my life is like right now. So, my wife is being gracious enough right now to play with the boys in the other room, so we can do this. So it's kind of one of those. The idea of actually sitting down and writing anything. I wanted to do a write up on my AR build for you, but the idea of sitting down and putting any time into that is just ridiculous.
Right. And I appreciate, you know, the fact that you share and comment and interact with people on the Facebook, because I don't pay you. You don't get money or anything. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's great having you on. It's great to talk to you in real life and not just on Messenger for once.
Yeah, for anybody that's lasted this long through this interview, understand this is the first time James and I have ever heard each other's voice.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know that. Yeah.
No idea. I found it so dorky.
I didn't, for some reason, until you started talking, I just didn't even realize that you would have
a Jamaican accent.
A Jamaican accent, yeah. Which is, I don't know if you've caught that episode, but that's how we make fun of Jeff Radke in Wisconsin now. But yeah.
Hey, man, I live up here by Green Bay.
Oh, it's, before we get off, like, it just useless listener retention, I think, like, a semi-truck of Wisconsin cheese was just stolen. I'm like, those damn hooligans. I'm like, Mike, did you go to Wisconsin and steal a trailer of cheese?
I plead the fucking fifth.
Yeah. Yeah. Man.
A bunch of Packer fans got together and formed a gang.
The greatest cheese heads in history.
Oh, my God. The great cheddar heist.
Yeah.
Of 2016.
Yeah. Go Packers.
I've heard it said a thousand times. I've heard it said a thousand times. And whatever. I would have pissed some people off, but fuck them. But the Packers would be a great team if it wasn't for the fans, right? I mean,
we're not football fans, but we arbitrarily picked the Packers as our team. So
yeah, separately of each other and for completely different reasons.
Yeah, but we're not cheeseheads for any matter, but it's. You know,
you need
it could be worse. It could be Detroit Lion fans.
Hey, guys, the Packers lost. We got to go hijack this cheese truck off the highway.
Wait a second. They did lose recently, I think.
Yeah, yeah, that's why they stole the cheese truck.
That's exactly
it's
why they stole it.
Fucking retribution.
And on that bombshell. yeah, I'll talk to you later, Grizz.
All
what's
right, that? Man. Talk to you later.
Closing thoughts?
Yeah. No, I just Boston, you know, their team loses. They burn down a town, you know.
Actors, yeah.
They lose, they steal a cheese truck. Anyway, but yeah.
Yep. That's a lot better. Talk to you later, man.
Take it easy.
See ya.